philosophers in space, 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 space.
Only a Sith deals in absolutes.
There is no such thing as Silicon Heaven.
Oh, then where do all the calculators go?
Uncertainty is inherently unsustainable. Eventually, everything either is or isn't.
Sparks happen. Yeah, she knows it's a multipass.
Hello and welcome to Philosophers in Space. It's episode 15. And how are you doing, Aaron?
I'm doing great. I'm looking forward to meddling in the minds of some less developed entities.
As opposed to the less developed entity in me that you meddle with every single week. Like another
exactly.
One.
Exactly. Okay. Oh, yeah. No. I'm not talking about you or our fans, obviously. This time I'm talking about our topic, obviously, specifically.
Well, we've got another person floating out here with us. It's Professor David Kyle Johnson. How are you doing? You go by Kyle, right?
That is correct. Greetings. How's it going? Thomas
doing
and Aaron?
Great. We're really excited to have you. I'm looking at your great course you have entitled Sci-Fi. We actually thought about that as a name for the show, Sci-Phi, Science Fiction as Philosophy, which is really in line with what we're trying to do here. So it just seemed like a really cool opportunity to get you on. Thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, I'm glad I found you guys. I put up a request on my Facebook from the people who follow me on Facebook said I'm looking for podcasts. Like who should I ask? And you guys came up immediately. So
nice.
I'm glad you're able to fit me in. And I think this is going to be great.
Oh, I think it'll be a perfect fit. So let's talk about, we're going to center our discussion around the season finale of Orville and how it relates to the Prime Directive and things like that. There's going to be plenty to talk about. But do you want to do the exposition zone for us, break down what we need to know about this episode?
Yeah, so a little a summary of the season finale of Orville. The crew of the Orville are going along and they detect a seeming anomaly and they go out to inspect what this anomaly is. And I believe it's Kelly. And I forget exactly who's all on the shuttlecraft. But then a planet appears out of nowhere. And they can't quite figure out what's going on, where the planet came from. They crash land on the planet. They go out and explore a little bit. Kelly specifically goes out and explores a little bit. And they mention something akin to the Prime Directive, right? Like, you shouldn't interfere with anybody. Don't let anybody see you or whatever. And she's like, oh, I know, you don't have to tell me. And then she immediately goes and interferes with some people. Some people see her. A little girl sees her. She falls and hits her head. And then she uses a device to heal the little girl.
My wife will testify that when we watched this, the minute she healed the little girl, I was like, she's now a god. It's happening. That's how this goes.
Yeah.
I think we should point out that none of this is spoilery, because as soon as you know that you're about to watch an episode about the Prime Directive, like, you know exactly what every part of the steps is going
Plus,
to be.
Plus, I'm sure there's many episodes of like Star Trek and other shows that have done pretty much this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, this is a take on the TNG episode Who Watches the Watchers, where Picard becomes a god to the name's escaping me, the alien name, but they had eliminated religion in their culture. And then, Beverly heals one of them and she takes him up to the ship. And so he thinks he's in heaven and da-da-da-da-da. Right. So it's a take on this. What I think is the most interesting thing, the kind of most unique thing about this episode is, so we know where this is going, right? Like, as you say, when she heals the little girl, they go back to the shuttle, they go back up to the ship and the planet disappears again. And they realize, and this is the unique part, that the planet is shifting in and out of their universe. And so it spins just a few days or a few hours or something like that in our universe. 72 hours, in our universe. And then it shifts into this other universe. And then it experiences 400 years, 700 years?
I think it's 700.
Yeah, 700 sounds... Yeah, so it's in this other universe for 700 years, and then after 11 days, it will come back and then be back in our universe for 72 hours. And so they see the effects of Kelly's interference, right? Like the long-term effects in a very short amount of time. So 11 days for them later, the planet has aged 700 years. They go back and look, and of course, what they discover is a society in essentially a medieval times, what would be equivalent to our medieval times, where Kelly is worshipped as a god. People are being punished in her name. Little children are being frightened to not, you know, do little misdeeds because Kelly will get you, and Kelly's always watching. She is horrified by this, and eventually she goes into, I'm skipping some bits and pieces here, but eventually they decide, they get in trouble, obviously, for the interference, and the admiral basically tells them, don't go back down there. You can't do anything. You don't try to correct this. You've already screwed up enough. And they essentially say, now we're going to try to correct it. So Ed and Kelly and a few other crew members go back down, and they essentially find the space pope. They find the pope of the Kelly religion and try to convince him that Kelly is not a god. And they do so by essentially taking the little healing apparatus down and showing him how it works, right? She cuts her hand, she heals it. He cuts his hand, he uses the tool to heal it himself. So he sees that it's the tool that's healing it, not her. And he becomes convinced. He says, oh, I realize now that you're not a god. And so the people must know, right? And so he's basically decides, I think, that he's going to tell everybody what's going on. And his lieutenant essentially says, right, like,
We're not going to give up this control we have over people.
Yeah, this is the moment where I was like immediately like, oh yeah, well, he's dead now. That's great.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. As soon as he decides, well, we got to tell everybody. The lieutenant's like, no, this is how we have power. This is how we have control. This is how we keep people in line. This is our, this is what we do instead of having it replaces any kind of police force or whatever kind of any threat of punishment you might be able to actually instill. You just make people think they'll be punished by Kelly, and it keeps them in line.
Yeah, we know how religion works.
We're low-key secular around here.
And so, of course, Space Pope is killed. The Pope of Kelly is killed. She thinks she solved everything, but when they return again 700 years, which is essentially equivalent to our 21st century, you see that, like, religious wars are being fought in the name of Kelly. There's basically like a Fox News version of what's like, you see a Fox News kind of thing where somebody's preaching about like Kelly being in the government, and then there's wars being raged in the name of Kelly, and it you get the impression that, like, you know, I think there was something about there was like a debate about public schools and whether they should be teaching the religion of Kelly in public schools, right? So it's just, it's basically what we have.
It's basically Bush administration.
Yes, that's exactly what. Yeah. And so she's like, well, we got to undo this. And so they figure that the only way they can undo this is by going down and having a long time to convince them. And so Kelly says she's willing to go down there and try to correct her mistake. And Ed's like, but you'll die there, right? Like, it's, well, we won't see you for 700 years. You will be long dead, right, by the time the planet appears again. And she's like, I know, but I'm willing to do it. And Isaac says, you don't have to. Isaac's the AI on the Orville, right? I live a long time. My battery will last that long. I'll go down there and I'll explain it to him, and I'll try to correct.
They go all Futurama is what I know, but that, I'm guessing it's a reference. There's probably some deeper reference, but the Futurama where Bender gets like lost in the 20th century and then they come back and find him, and it's like he's just been singing the whole time.
there's a Data time travel episode that is very similar, I think, to this as well.
Right, although Data's not conscious the whole time, right?
No,
he loses his
sense,
right? And then it ages. But yeah, Bender's basically conscious for 1,000 years, I believe. He gets buried underneath in New York City, and then they just, you know, they go and extract him at the right moment in the in the episode, right? But so that's essentially when Isaac goes down and he's going to spend 700 years convincing them. But then, so they let the 11 days pass, 700 years pass. The planet appears again. It's clearly advanced. In fact, it's arguably more advanced than the Orville's world is, or the Planetary Union's technology. They've advanced beyond that. In fact, it seems that they are, because they beam on board. The Orville does not have a transporter, but these new entities that appear from the planet do. They beam on board with Isaac. But then the story they tell is essentially like, you know, first of all, we figured it's time to give your AI back, right? Your artificial life form, I think they call Isaac. But secondly, they essentially make the argument that Kelly didn't do any damage. They say that, look, you didn't really do any damage. If it hadn't been you, it would have just been something else. We would have worshipped something else during that time. Having a religion and being devoted to a religion like that and doing all of these horrible things in the name of that religion is just part of the growing pains of any society. We had to go through that. We went through it. We learned from it, essentially. And then we grew beyond that. And even Isaac didn't Isaac kind of ruffled things up whenever he showed up in the equivalent of our 21st century. But we quickly became accustomed to him and we just continued on as we would have regardless. You didn't really do anything. Isaac didn't change anything. Kelly really didn't change anything. We would have ended up exactly where we are anyway. So you don't need to worry about any kind of interference. You didn't do any damage. And they have some lines in there about you need to learn to have, we grew beyond that old religious faith. You need to learn to have faith in rationality and the scientific mind or the rational mind or something along that line. There's lines like that. I have that written down actually somewhere. That's basically the end.
Right. I love the part where just one guy going down and speaking the truth. I actually find that believable that that didn't really matter. We just got used to it. And because these forces in society are so much more powerful. It's always a funny thing in a show or a movie where it's like one person finds something out and then they tell everybody and it's like, oh, okay, that's fixed. And it's like, nowadays it just gets called fake news. Just because you have the truth, it doesn't mean everybody instantly grasps the truth. So I found that interesting. And the other thing that I found funny though about this episode was wait, they could just stay here forever and keep getting amazing insights from 700 years in the future from the society. But conveniently it ends right where it ends,
Yeah.
It would have been great if the last part of that speech was, oh, and we can't give you any of our technology because,
Prime directive.
They do say that one day that we will study you, right? But they don't. That would have been classic. They said, but we couldn't. Yeah, we can't let you in on
that. Is so funny.
No, how did sorry. They miss that? That we cured been, death, but
that would have been incredible.
Awkward.
Which just a little bit of an aside. Another podcast I listened to. Called Mission Log is going through Deep Space Nine right now. And so I've been kind of binge watching Deep Space Nine. And at the beginning of season two, they have this episode where a right-wing religious faction takes over the government of Bajor. And this is such an apropos episode. Kira gets evidence of collusion between the right faction and the Cardassians. And she wants to reveal it, right? She wants to. And what I found so fascinating about the episode is that the assumption by everyone in the episode, Kira, Sisko, even the people who are in the right wing faction, are once that evidence is examined, then that's it.
Then everybody will know. Yeah.
We're out of power, right? There won't be any cries of fake news or anything
that's
like that.
That's exactly what I was talking about. That's exactly what I was talking about.
I have to add an aside to your aside. Everyone on Twitter should follow Real Gul Dukat because it is one of the best Twitter accounts of all time. It is literally a guy tweeting Gul Dukat doing rewrites of Donald Trump's tweets, and it is exceptional. Okay.
That sounds amazing. Yeah, so I actually recently wrote a blog article for Psychology Today up for my Plato on Pop blog, where I essentially argued that Trump is making sci-fi more relevant but less believable.
Right.
Because it's more relevant because these kind of things, the kind of dystopian things are happening, but they're unbelievable because in DS9, they act like evidence matters when it clearly doesn't. And they always have these happy endings when it doesn't look like we're going to have a happy ending, right? And so anyway, go ahead.
No, so I think that's a really great summary, and maybe we should start to shift a little bit towards sort of the philosophical issues behind this, maybe starting a little bit by you could talk a little bit some of the why the Prime Directive ends up as the central concept of Star Trek, it seems like, with the colonialism stuff.
Sure, right. So in my course, Sci-Fi, Science Fiction as Philosophy, which I did for the great courses, I have a lecture dedicated to the Prime Directive and examining whether the Prime Directive really is kind of a good rule or not, whether it'd be really if we were to one day become a Star Trek-like, have a Star Trek-like existence where we're exploring of the universe, whether we should have a kind of non-interference directive. And I mention, So one of the main reasons, I think, that the Prime Directive was conceived by Gene Roddenberry was because of the realization about the dangers of colonialism, right? So when I talk about colonialism, I'm essentially thinking of the way the Europeans colonized the rest of the world, whether it be the Americas or India or Africa. And in doing so, they caused a lot of harm. They not only, you know, killed, some harm was indirect in that they just brought disease and then the disease wiped out the native populations. They also did it directly by enslaving them, or they did it by replacing their culture. Essentially, they bring in their own culture and then they forcefully try to replace their cultural practices and their religion and that kind of stuff until the culture dies out. And that this damage was extensive throughout the world that Europeans did to native populations. And that in the 60s, we're starting to kind of recognize the damage that we had done. And it seems strange that it would take so long for us to recognize it. But you have to remember that before this, a lot of people thought Europeans had a divine mandate to do this kind of thing. And they thought they weren't harming the savages. They were enlightening the savages and bringing Western culture and civilization to them. And so they justified all the harm.
That's just good science. Well, I'm just saying that's just good science. I want to steel man the other side's position here. There's some argument about all of this. No, go ahead. Carry on.
Yeah, they did. They did argue from like Aristotle,
Aquinas.
Aquinas and like natural law and these kind of moral truths could be discovered by reason and there are other philosophers who thought that that God had established a racial hierarchy, that kind of stuff, and that they were just doing God's will by putting every race in its place and that kind of stuff. But that's where all this justification came from. But in the 60s, we're starting to kind of realize.
Did anyone ever say that God had established a racial hierarchy and then their race is like toward the bottom? Did anyone ever do that?
I don't think that's ever happened. No, I don't think any philosopher has ever like. Yeah.
I think it's always weird that it's always there. Your race ends up at the top of the hierarchy. Isn't that bizarre?
I mean, I guess with the Jews, they're the chosen people, but they usually don't end up at the top.
That's
probably the closest I'm going to get.
That's a fair point. Yeah. Probably the closest you're going to get.
We have a famous saying where the Jews always say, God, could you please choose somebody else for once?
Right.
Yeah.
But it seems that Roddenberry is trying to guard against this kind of colonialism by having this non-interference directive in the original show. But as I try to argue in the lecture, he didn't do a very good job in the original series, because Kirk is almost as colonial as you can get in many, many, many episodes, where he basically just thinks it's perfectly fine to impose his way of life and his values and stuff on primitive cultures, like in The Apple and The Feeders of All. Which I can go into more detail in that if you want me to talk about that. But it develops, it seems, like a lot of post-colonial thought comes after the original series. It happens in the 70s and 80s. And so by the time we get to TNG in the 90s, the Prime Directive is taken a lot more seriously. And you don't, like Picard never tries to impose his way of life or his values on another culture. The closest you get is, I think, is in Justice, in the first season episode Justice, where Wesley trips, goes into the grass, and they're in the society where the punishment for any law is death. Like the punishment for breaking any law is death. He steps on the grass, or he breaks a glass. Yeah,
we mentioned this one in a previous episode, right? Because the zones of laws move around.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Maximally absurd legal system.
Well, it's a very panopticon-like thing, right? Like, you never know where the zone is.
Yeah, well, it's just trying to get maximum enforcement with, like, two guys doing all the enforcing, I think. But yeah, I also love that in the original series, the Prime Directive never stopped Kirk from essentially having sex with someone every episode that wasn't part of the Prime Directive. Like, sex, fine, but, don't interfere more than that.
Right, right. Well, I mean, you say that, but then, of course, there was, he destroyed Landru. That was actually the first episode where the non-interference directive was mentioned. What is that episode? Landru is it's the one with the festival.
Yeah, I remember that, but I can't. Yeah.
Yeah, the name is escaping me, but that's like, I mean, he's perfectly fine with destroying Landru. He's perfectly fine with destroying Vol for the feeders of Vol.
The Prime Directive is more of, it's advice. It's a loose, you know.
Yeah. And it's not very well supported at any point.
Yeah, no, it's just kind of there. I mean, essentially, initially, it's there. You get more of a defense for it in TNG. Like, Picard tries to give some arguments for it a little bit later, which we can talk about some of those arguments, like the unintended consequence argument.
Well, maybe let's do that. Maybe let's talk about, like, you know, if you were writing a series, or if you were designing a futuristic civilization, I mean, what are the pros and cons of something like a Prime Directive?
Yeah, so, I mean, the pros are, and this has to do with unintended consequences. The pros are you can't be blamed for something. So in other words, if I, like, so take the episode of TNG where they save Sarjanka's planet. I forget, but it's like all these planets explode and Sarjanka's this little girl that Data's contacted, right? And they're not going to save the planet, and then eventually they do. What if Sarjanka ends up becoming the next Hitler, right? Or the next Kanunian Singh? You, like, people can look back at you and go, hey, you're the one that saved the planet, and now she's Hitler, and right? And now, you know, X number of people are dead, so that's on you. You shouldn't have saved the planet. If you don't interfere, you can't be blamed like that.
Well,
right?
But so you can be blamed the other way, though, right? Like, because there's episodes where it's like, okay, we've got a disease, and you've got the perfect medicine. But, you know, like, if you don't interfere and you could save countless lives, like, do you not get some blame that way?
Yeah.
Well, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, like you say in your great courses thing that I did read through the text of it, like, in that very episode, Troy makes the same kind of argument that, like, you're part of the process either way. Like, your refusal to engage in it is just as much of a choice as engaging in it. So it's problematic.
Yeah. Well, I think that there's actually kind of two separate arguments here, right? Like Troy's answering Riker, who's making a kind of, we can't play God argument.
But that is essentially sort of the same argument. I feel like, I mean, like, the unintended consequences, we can't play God. Like, the problem with playing God is unintended consequences, it seems like.
Oh, I guess so, right? I guess it depends on if you take a kind of utilitarian view. So let me put it this way. It depends on what you mean by, would you say we shouldn't play God? It depends on what you mean.
Right. Like someone else could mean it like we don't have the right to play God or something, versus the consequences will be bad if we play God.
Right. Right. And so let me talk about each of those in turn. Let's go to the cosmic plan and, like, we don't have the right to play God, right? The argument that Riker is making at that particular point in the Sarjanka episode is that, like, he's saying that there's a cosmic plan.
Yeah,
it would be the height of hubris for us to think that we should interfere in that cosmic plan by keeping the planet from exploding. And what Troy rightfully points out is, like, look, even if there is a cosmic plan, you have no idea what it is. So you can't know if we're not supposed to interfere.
Right. Right. Yeah.
If you're here as part of the cosmic plan and we're supposed to save them, and that's the cosmic plan.
Yeah. That strikes me as a really bad argument. It's kind of like a naturalism fallacy or whatever, where naturalistic fallacy, where it's like, there's this feeling that whatever was going to happen naturally was going to be the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then that makes it automatically superior because it's natural, and that,
right.
And that invokes the kind of the appeal to nature fallacy.
This is why I love the Orville episode so much, because it plays to my own priors about the Prime Directive being sort of trumped up post-colonial nonsense, that, like, while I'm sympathetic to the concerns of post-colonialism, I think that the moral relativism that you mentioned a little bit that it falls into is very, very problematic, and that there are absolutely cases where engagement is justified, and that also on the flip side, as those people argue at the end of Orville, like, the engagement doesn't prevent the people from developing. It's part of the process of their development. Like, honestly, like, you know, maybe we could do a little thought experiment here for a second. Step into our thought experiment machine.
Initiate thought experiment. Thought experiment online.
Wouldn't you prefer that an alien society that was peaceful and highly advanced had showed up in the 1600s and, like, taught a bunch of people a bunch of stuff about how not to be horrible towards each other and given them advanced technology? Like, consider where we would be now compared to where we are if they had done that.
Right. As long as they, like stuck around, and like the little worries I have are things like if they had given us medical technology without further technology to be able to feed people, we might have ended up, you know, with two people living too long, we wouldn't have enough food to, you know, to feed them or something. So you'd have a lot of, you know, a lot of people starving or something like that. But if they kind of generally advance us overall and they're teaching us like how to be, you know, how to be better to each other, and it avoids the Inquisition and it avoids the Crusades, yeah, and like, yeah, I think that would actually probably be better, right?
I think you're right though, Aaron, in that like it is, I think it goes too far, like an outright rule of just never help anybody ever, like with no exceptions, obviously goes too far. But I could see the other way, of course, which is becoming too entangled in another, yeah, and we see real life examples of this whenever you try to help some other, I don't know, country or whatever, either way, becoming too entangled in what they're doing. And then like, how do you gauge, okay, how much of a presence should we have in their government, mm-hmm, and what they're doing? And, you know, the lines get blurry, then there's all kinds of problems that could go along with that. So it seems like maybe some sort of modified rule that tries to capture the advantages and limit the disadvantages might be the best.
Yeah, but I guess, so like the disadvantages seem to me primarily, A, that colonialism seems to involve extraction of resources, some sort of taking advantage of those local people while you are colonializing, you know, while you're colonizing them. And then B, is the enforcement of certain things onto them. And I think where we get confused is that because historically people have enforced very bad things onto other people, that necessarily...
Oh, you're going to do colonialism right. Okay.
Exactly.
You're going to get colonialism correct.
If any of the person on this show is going to be the kind of person who's going to like argue for the correct, you know, like, no.
The what cure to is, bad colonialism is good colonialism.
Exactly, right? The only thing that stops a bad colonialist with a gun is a good colonialist with a better ray gun, with a ray gun, right? It would have worked here.
Yeah, but no, I think that there's something to be said for that, right? So like what I kind of argue in the lecture is that if you're trying to justify your non-interference directive with a moral relativism, that's not going to work because moral relativism is false. If you think there are moral facts at all, they aren't relevant to culture. Maybe you don't think there are moral facts. Maybe you're a nihilist. But if you think that, moral relativism is still false because morality is not relative to anything. If nihilism is true, it's just doesn't exist, right?
Let's hold on. I just want to, for our, not all of our fans are necessarily knowledgeable in all the terminology. So I just want to make explicit, moral relativism is the view that what is moral depends on a culture's view of what is moral. So if a culture thinks that torturing babies is moral, then it is moral for that culture. I just wanted to give them an example to hold on to. Right. Carry on.
So yeah, so that's moral relativism. And that's the idea that often goes with post-colonial thought, is you can't interfere. You should not interfere with another culture because what's right for them is right for them. And what might not be, you know, what's right for you is right for you. And they may not agree, and you can't impose your morals on them because your morals only apply to you and your culture. Right. And that seems to be clearly false because A, it's self-contradictory because you're saying it's morally wrong to enforce your morals on another culture. It's like, well, according to which culture is it morally wrong? Right. Right? Like the theory itself invokes, you know, moral standards of right and wrong. But secondly, you just have obvious counterexamples, right? Like a culture thinking that slavery is morally acceptable doesn't make it morally acceptable, right? And so you might be a moral nihilist and just think there are no moral facts at all. And that's a position that one could argue for. But even if you're a nihilist, moral relativism is still false because if there are no moral facts, then they're not true relative to any culture at all. They're just not true. And you certainly couldn't berate the colonialist and say that they've done something morally wrong by enslaving such and such native population, because there is no moral right and wrong, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So
make Cardassia great again.
Right. Yeah. So if you think there are like any moral, let me put it this way. I think a better justification for the prime directive is a kind of epistemic humility about our moral knowledge. We may have to admit that our moral knowledge is not as solid as we think it is, and so we can't be as sure as we sometimes feel about what's right and wrong. And if you can't be as sure about it, then you probably don't have the right to enforce your morality. Like if you're pretty sure that X is wrong and this society is doing X, then you know, you might feel like you're justified, but if you can't be sure enough that X is wrong, then you probably ought to just kind of stay out of it. But there's got to be some exceptions, right? Like, it seems absurd to say, well, Sarjanka's planet is about to explode and her entire civilization is about to be destroyed. And for me to say, well, you know, I don't know if it's a good thing to save a planet from destruction. Maybe they like to be destroyed. I don't know what their morality is, right? Like, that seems to stretch, you know, that seems to stretch imagination.
Or maybe we have a moral obligation to uplift species. There's a book series that people keep telling us we need to read that, like, species uplift other species to higher forms of consciousness. And, like, of course, in that system, they then enslave them as, like, indentured servants. But, like, we got to leave the slavery part out is what I'm saying. Whatever we do, no slavery. But I do think there is an argument to be made that if you have the capacity to improve the capacities of another entity without it costing you much, that you should do
so. I think
it's super clear that what you're doing is improving them, right?
Yeah, like,
we're going to keep them from killing each other. We're going to keep them from enslaving
another. So that's interesting. So it's my intuition is that when it comes to more passive forms of resource or knowledge supplying, that seems like a no-brainer. Like, if you've got the medicine they need, obviously. If you've got food that's not going to cost you, you know, any lives to give up or something, obviously, if you've got some knowledge to offer them. But where it becomes tough for me is when you get too entangled and things like even when you talk about slavery. So obviously slavery, horrible, like anything that if I'm the commander of a ship and I can somehow stop a civilization from doing that. But think about like practically how does that play out, though? If you encounter an entire planet that has a whole system built on something you think is morally wrong, like slavery, whatever it might be. Do you just go down and just mandate with your weapons that they stop, that they totally change their civilization? Like, I just think practically speaking, it's very difficult to imagine that going very well. And then you're at war with that, you know, civilization. Wait. And then how do you figure out what level of entanglement is going to be acceptable? Because if it's as easy as just saying slavery is wrong, then yeah, that's easy. But I don't think it is that easy.
I think you're a pessimist about planet building. I'm saying, like, we're going to be greeted as liberators and it's going to be fine. Like, somebody's got to give the minority report around here.
No, it's a great point, right? So think of like... The episode, first season TNG episode, where they have the Onorans and the Breckians and...
Yeah, the drug addicts.
Right? Oh, like I love that one. I feel like that was later than the first season. Am I wrong? But yeah, I love that
one. Season. No, it's first season because it's Crusher. Crusher is the doctor. Second season is... And then it's, of course, third season on. But I know it's not as late as third season. So I'm pretty sure it's first season. Wesley's there. And in fact, I think that it's a pretty early first season because I'm pretty sure that Tasha Yar is on the crew at that point. But anyway, that's like, I mean, they could easily, like, all they have to do is just, you know, tell them that they're drug addicts, right? All they have to do is just reveal the fact that they don't need it anymore. And here's the medicine to ease with symptoms. And you're not going to be, right, dependent on anyone. But if you're really going to make it completely right, they're going to have to go to the Breckian civilization and redo their entire economy because their entire economy is dedicated to the production of that drug, right? And then at that point, Aaron,
it's absurdist to me.
You could let the entire civilization die, I guess, at that point.
The civilization's not going to die. They're going to find something else to do with their time to make the resource. Like, come on. Like, the idea that you're just going to walk away from an entire culture that's addicted to a life-destroying drug for the sake of preserving another culture, it's just absurd. Like, it's one of the purest examples of moral relativism gone awry, I think.
That's a good point, right? You might, I mean, essentially what you might do is take the Orwellian, take on this, right? And say that whatever happens to them, their entire economy is dedicated to the production of the drug. We take the drug away, they'll adapt, right? It'll be hard for them for a while, but they'll figure out how to do it. Other societies have done it. Right. You know, it's like go ahead.
No, I mean, there's a problem that I want to bring in here. There's the problem of like dirty hands within ethics, that like people tend to avoid something that makes them feel like they've gotten their hands dirty in the process. But like, there's no way that Picard can know for sure that like 10 minutes after they leave, the one culture realizes that they can just murder the other culture and take what they need and then finds out that the thing that they need is actually a drug they're addicted to. Like, there's no way to know that they're preserving the harmonious balance that was there when they left. Like, it could have been on the brink of collapse at any point anyway.
Yeah. I got to be the one with my eye on the watch here. We're actually just about out of time for the main show. But Kyle, do you mind sticking around for a little bit of bonus after hours talk here?
Absolutely. Let me, before we kind of wrap it up, let me, you know, kind of plug the course, if that's all right.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Yeah, sure. Feel free.
We've been talking about a lecture from my new course with The Great Courses called Sci-Fi with the PHI. Very clever pun. Science Fiction as Philosophy. It is out now. You can get it multiple ways. You can go to the Great Courses website and find it there and buy a DVD or a CD, or you can stream it either audio or video. I really recommend the video because we did some really cool stuff with the production. Nice. And I got a lot of cool toys for my office and stuff that are in the background, and we do different things with them. And there's some other visual gags that we do, throughout the course. They really let me get away with a lot, and they shot it differently than they've ever shot any other course. The visuals are very, very fun. And the alternate worlds lecture is my favorite one, in that regard. But you can also, get it on Audible. It's a book on Audible, which you get through Amazon. It should be, on iTunes, I believe. And you can also get it through the Great Courses Plus. So the Great Courses has an app that's like their version of Netflix, but it's called the Great Courses Plus, and you can view any of their, lectures. It should be around June 20th. I think it should be on Great Courses Plus. And you can sign up for Great Courses Plus, and they do it about a monthly fee or whatever. I think you can even get a month for free. And you could watch or listen to it there. And so those are all the different ways to get your hands on the course.
Well, that is super cool. I know that's definitely something a lot of our listeners will be interested in. I mean, it's the very topic we try to tackle. I think it's a good fit. Sounds really cool. Everyone should check that out.
Yeah, thanks. And just to be clear, it's science fiction, television, and film is what I talk about. It's not literature. They have a different course for literature. Hmm. So we're talking Inception, The Matrix, Contact. The lecture involves The Orville, 2001: A Space Odyssey, The Handmaid's Tale, Metropolis. It's all over the place. It's old, new, cult, unknown. I can talk about Blake 7. Most people don't know about Blake 7. I'm all kind of all over the place.
I'm still on Blake 1 through 6. I haven't gotten to.
I'm looking forward to plagiarizing this later. I'm excited to steal some ideas for some future episodes. Great.
No,
thanks,
super cool.
Thanks so much for letting us know this exists.
You're welcome.
All right. Well, thanks so much for coming on and talking about this on the main show here. We're, of course, going to keep you around for some After Dark bonus talk for our patrons since you're being so kind. But thank you so much for coming on and talking about this. It's really fun.
Thanks for having me on so much. Just remember it with the Prime Directive. Remember it this way. You would never say, I'm not going to save that drowning baby because it might grow up to be Hitler. For the same reason, you would never say, I'm not going to save that planet because one day one of them might become Khandu Niansingh.
There you go.
That's all for the main show. But if you'd like to go to patreon.com/0G, you can enjoy Philosophers in Space After Dark. Here's a little sneak peek for you.
Yeah, so I mean, I guess the real way to solve this problem is just to create a simulated world and run the simulation right and figure out what happens if you don't have a religion in it.
Yeah, turns out they instantly advanced to like space age like right away.
Yeah, man, we got stuck in the wrong simulation. Stupid controlled group.
This has been a burst transmission of Philosophers in Space. All music written and performed by Thomas Smith. If you've enjoyed your infotainment upload, please locate the nearest podcast interface device and fill it with 5-star ratings and glowing reviews. If you think Ground Control should spring for fun new goodies and content, consider supporting us at patreon.com/0G. You can find us on Twitter at @0GPhilosophy, where Aaron will instantly and compulsively respond. Or you can email us at philosophersinspace@gmail.com. Finally, if you're sad that it takes so long for our signals to reach Earth, you can always find Thomas over at Serious Inquiries Only and Opening Arguments, and Aaron over at Embrace the Void. Until next time, live long and philosopher.